This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Good morning and welcome to the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University, which is this morning in the process of being remodeled. That's right, the Barca loungers are gone, the paneling is being removed, and we're doing studio maintenance this weekend, and that means we have a best of show for you. Today's show aired originally on October 8th and featured news about the death of Steve Jobs, the founder, co-founder of Apple. And we'll also have the pop quiz, a profile of Steve Jobs' life, and your chance to win free food from Stratford University. So pay attention. We give you the number. Feel free to call us this morning if you have the right answer, and you could win free lunch from Stratford University. This is the best of Tech Talk on Federal News Radio. Sit back and enjoy.
And this was a sad week in technology this week. The passing of Steve Jobs.
I think it was expected, but, you know, after he stepped down.
It was expected, but
not, maybe not this quickly.
But not this quickly. And then it forces you to be somewhat retrospective about the impact he had on computers. He was a very controversial figure. The open source people didn't like him because it was a closed source kind of operating system that he always proposed for the Apple systems and Apple devices. But he changed the face of computing. He influenced computing in a very dramatic way. In this show, we're going to reflect on Steve Jobs and how he did change computers, because he's not really a geek. He's more of an artist.
Yeah.
He's an artist who surrounded himself by technologists, and he was allowed to transform the technology to meet the needs of the user.
And he wasn't the tech guy.
No.
He was the guy that had the ideas, and other people built this stuff, right?
He was the person who could visualize the potential of a technology, and he helped techies create products that were usable by grandma, by kindergartners, by anybody.
Or me.
Or you. I think that Steve Jobs brought computer technology within your reach.
Exactly. That's true. And I really didn't get that until I got the iPhone.
Yeah. And so that is, and we'll talk about how he did it, sort of where he, and he was a high school, he was a dropout. So we'll get into that.
Mm-hmm.
This week was kind of a, you know, eventful event. Facebook now has more users than were on the entire internet back in 2004. We're going to look at the Facebook items. And also, I'm going to give a rundown on the iPhone 4S. Finally, the iPhone has come up with a series of, with a collection of features that appeal to me. They finally have the one item that I wanted.
What is that? I'm blowing the...
I wanted to have both GSM as well as CDMA.
Right. That's right, of course.
And
yeah.
I knew the radio, I knew that they had a dual radio in the iPhone 4, but they only... For the Verizon, they only hooked up the CDMA, and for the AT&T, they only hooked up the GSM. But now the new iPhone 4S, both of the radios are attached, so you can toggle back and forth.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And now it is a true world phone.
Oh, good.
And that's what I was waiting on. We'll review the iPhone 4S. You know, people, you know, say that maybe it's iPhone for Steve. It came out the same week.
Mm-hmm.
That's really not where the name came from, but I'm certain that that's how it will be remembered.
Do you think that they kind of got it out there quickly because they knew he was...
No, I don't think so.
No coincidence
at
all?
No, it wasn't any coincidence. And in fact, when they announced that the new CEO of Apple gave the press conference, and everybody panned him because they said the guy was just deadpan.
Mm-hmm.
But now we know that while that press conference was going on, Steve was dying, and he knew it.
Which is probably why he was.
And he was just trying to put on a game face to get through that event. So now people looking back on it say, well, he did okay given the circumstances.
Yeah, really.
And many columnists actually have apologized to him for being so tough on him at that time. This was also the week of Ada Lovelace Day.
Oh, my goodness.
So we'll go back and talk about Ada.
Yeah.
Ada Lovelace and what that means on her day. And, of course, it was a very, very large mailbag. And so now it is time for...
There's a letter in your mailbox.
We got an email from Bob in Maryland. Bob writes, Dear Tech Talk, I never send fan mail to a radio show, but I have to tell you that Tech Talk is the best radio show about technology on the air. I love it, and I tell my friends to listen, too. Thanks.
Well, that's great.
Bob in Maryland. What a great email.
I know.
We love to get
How
that
nice.
Kind of email. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can, you know, if you have more of those kind of emails, just send them to techtalk@stratford.edu.
And not the, would you guys just shut up? And,
that's right. Yeah, I don't like that kind
those
of
those I don't like either.
No, I don't like those. We got an email from... a Maryland listener. Dear Dr. Richard Schertz, I use Windows Live Mail and have a Verizon Fios account with 7 subaccounts. I went to add a new subaccount recently and things got all screwed up. I've tried to troubleshoot this and found a warning on Broadband Report's website that says there's an issue with IE8 and Verizon subaccounts. Evidently, when trying to make changes to the Verizon subaccount, IE8 displays the table incorrectly, and when you click to add an account, you're actually clicking on deleting the account.
Oh, good.
So that's, and Verizon will not reinstate my email account once I've deleted them. I hope you can help with this. I'd also like to learn more about Windows Live Mail account activation steps. Teach me how to figure this out for myself. Please do that, because nobody at Verizon is going to help me. Apparently, the Maryland listener has been trying to call Verizon, and their help desk is really not really available.
I had problems with Verizon, too, which is why I now use AT&T.
So that's always a problem. Well, Maryland listener, I did check out this problem on lost subaccounts, and I checked out. There was one reference that I found. That's the same reference that you found on broadbandreports.com, that somebody had gone to with an IE8, and they deleted their subaccount. I could not find any references at all other than that one about that particular problem. I found no references in the Verizon account. Now, what I would suggest is that you go back with another browser, like Chrome or Foxfire, because the person that had the problem with IE8 said other browsers work. Go back with another browser and see whether you can see your subaccounts there with another browser. And it could very well be that IE8 is displaying the table improperly. Okay, well, now we have another email. Let me just finish these
let's
emails.
Finish the emails.
And then I'm going to get to the secret visitor.
The reason why we're laughing.
Dr. Bird has just walked in.
Yeah, well, I guess you could have guessed that.
Your email.
Yeah, okay. Okay, we've got an email from, by the way, Windows Live, Maryland listeners, not actually a real email account. It's an email consolidator. And so what it does, you can connect all of your email accounts, and you can read in one client all your email accounts. So you could connect Yahoo, Gmail, Hotmail. Now, you cannot go to Verizon and ask them how to use it. So what you want to do is Windows Live has a great description on how to use it and a great tutorial on the website. Go to explore.live.com/Windows Live Mail, or you can just Google Windows Live Mail and it'll take you to that page. It's a very simple explanation. I'd recommend you use that. We got an email from Jim. Dear Tech Talk, I was on a dating site.
Oh boy. That's why you showed up, isn't it, Bird?
and I met somebody on there. I sent her an email, and she never responded. Now I'm wondering, now that she knows my email address, can anything bad happen? Like, could she send me a virus?
Could anything bad happen?
Wow.
Or could I have my account cleaned out? I'm using Gmail. Thanks, Jim.
This guy's new to the show, isn't he?
Number one, yeah. Computer dating bad.
Okay, now here's the thing, Jim. Now, a lot of times people use throwaway email accounts.
Right.
So what you want to do is you could create a Gmail, another Gmail account or a Yahoo account.
Like Studmuffin at gmail.com,
yeah.
Since he's on.
And what you do is you set up another Gmail account. And when you're dealing with somebody you don't really know whether you trust them or not, use the throwaway account.
Right.
And then after you've established some credibility, Like if she answers
the call. Is that a code word?
Is that what they call that? Really?
Yeah.
Credibility is in the eyes of the beholder.
That's right. It's a family show.
Yeah. To achieve some credibility, then you could you could switch them over to your real email account.
Yeah.
Now, here's one of the problems. Now, could they get any information from your email account? Here's the problem. It is possible if you use that same email account all over the place. Like if you log on to blogs and use your email account, and they Google your email account, anytime you've listed it anywhere, it shows up. So they may be able to link you to real information if you've used that account in other places. So actually, it's always useful, I would say, if you want to know what people know about you, put in your email address and see what people pull up on you when they Google it.
Or you can just go to bars like the rest of us.
That's right. Okay. Thanks a lot for that email.
Thanks a lot for that email, Jim.
Listen, any further questions on these dating sites, just talk to Dr. Bird.
Dbird at loveline.com.
You can find me at lovemetender.com.
Now, we got an email from Robert. Dear Tech Talk, I'm interested in technology and computers. I hope to start my career soon, but where should I be focused? Love the show, Robert. I love this kind of question.
Send them to the Apple store.
Yeah, it's always good there. Well, I'll tell you, Robert, the thing is, if you're in technology, you know, things are always moving. So you want to know where technology will be in 5 years.
Right, yeah.
So, like, you really don't want to be, say, a server jock because, you know, servers are going away. Everything's going to become virtualized in the cloud. So we're really moving away from the, you know, a lot of hardware infrastructure into all the cloud-based computing service, you know, software as a service. So I would look at all these virtualized services. Security is not going to go away. You really want to get into security.
Security.
Information mining, data mining, information assurance is all extremely important. And see, Dr. Bird knows all of this because he's always data mining to come up with nuggets.
He's preachy right along with you.
Also, check the standards because, you know, the standards change slowly and you can sort of project where things are going to go. Like TCP/IP, the protocol on the Internet, developed in the summer of 1973, it's been around for a lot of years. And so if you check the standards, you can sort of project where things are going to go. I'd also read the industry rags. These are these free industry magazines you can read. Join user groups and go out and talk to users. Actually act like you're already professional and ask questions. So what you want to do is act like you're already in the field, and then you'll be in the field.
Wow.
So, host emeritus,
yes,
Dr. Bird, to what do we owe the pleasure?
Well, I just want to come down and kind of bask in the glow of the new release of the next generation iPhone.
Oh,
that's funny,
the 4S.
I'm sure, I'm a little disappointed. I understand.
The iPhone for Steve.
The iPhone for Steve. Is that what that was all about?
That's what people are saying.
Yeah, everybody's poo-pooing this because they're expecting a 5 version.
No, here's the thing.
But I like it.
I would. You get one?
I've ordered it.
Actually, Dave, I got to tell you, I'm going to get one.
Uh-oh. Our world has come crashing down.
I have to tell you.
You got it now?
It's a 3.
That's a shame. Yeah. It's a shame.
Well, I like it for the voice commands.
Yeah, the voice commands are good.
So I don't have to go into the calendar and do all this
stuff. That's Siri voice, S-I-R-I, voice command. And actually, it's gotten great reviews, this Siri voice, because they find, you know, Apple always makes things very usable.
Hey, Jim, who is this guy?
Dr. Richard Church is Stratford University.
You like the iPhone? Really?
Let me tell you what I've been waiting for.
Did he get a leather jacket? Swag here? What?
No.
I've been waiting
for
a world phone that had both GSM as well as CDMA.
Right.
This finally has it. Both.
Give me some skin, brother.
Both.
All right.
See, the thing is, I knew iPhone was going to come out with it because the iPhone 4 had both radios in it. But if you got Verizon, it just took the CDMA radio. If you got AT&T, that hooked the GSM radio.
Right.
You knew they were going to hook up both radios soon.
They did
that. So the iPhone 4 has both, and that's what I've been waiting on.
I can see you with this application because you are so busy, so multi-talented, so multitasking.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
what do you want?
President of a major university, running a couple of shows here, international traveler.
What do you want from him?
I don't want anything. I'm just glad he's finally come over to the bright side.
Such a personal crusade?
He left the blueberry. BlackBerry. Excuse me.
And now here's the thing. Now actually, it was a fairly modest overall improvement. They added the voice commands.
Right.
Then they added an 8 megapixel camera.
Right.
from a 5-megapixel camera. But I don't actually think people have the iPhone for the camera.
No,
I don't think that was.
I beg to differ with you, Doc.
Really?
I've been using that at the mothership.
You have?
And I take some great photographs and great videos. As a matter of fact, with this upgrade,
has 1080p.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, what they do, they've got a dual core processor, so they can handle more frames. So they've got a 1080p high resolution video, 1080p, mm-hmm. which is actually quite good, and that's because of the dual core processor.
Who is this guy?
Listen,
it's a world phone.
Unbelievable.
It is a world phone. Now they also say it's got faster uploads and downloads.
Yeah,
so you guys, but you got to buy it. Now here's the thing: it doesn't support 4G. 4G, you know, cell phone technology. It's just still 3G. Right. And that's a battery life problem. Every time you go with 4G, your battery only lasts about an hour and a half. And so I don't think they've solved the battery life problem on the 4G.
Well, so AT&T doesn't have the true 4G. They've got the 3G on steroids.
Right. Yeah. Well, see, Verizon has 4G, but the Verizon 4G phones, their batteries only last about 3 hours. They're actually worse than the iPhone.
AT&T, the battery's much more improved. I mean, I get a whole day. It used to be I'd have to charge it halfway through the day.
On your iPhone?
Yeah.
The batteries have gotten better, but not if you would be 4G. The 4G really uses a lot of energy. I think it's but who needs the 4G? Because now that they're putting on these capped data plans, really people don't need that extra speed.
Unless your grandfather.
Right. what do you what phone do you have? The 4G.
I've got the what they call the 4G.
Yeah. Okay.
And now you've ordered the 4G.
Yes. I've ordered the for nothing else, just to organize so I can do the voice commands. You automatically go to the calendar. It updates your PC at home. It does it all. I just love it.
Mm-hmm. Now, so I've been using. I got voice commands on my BlackBerry.
Of course you do, Doc.
I've been using voice
Jimmy
commands
and I are
for
just
years.
Mortals. We're just hanging around.
I've also got voice commands on my navigation system in the car. Now, what is funny?
You know, and I'll bet he's got a British accent.
Now,
that voice commands.
Now, let me tell you
British
something.
British female accent.
No. Have you ever noticed that you have to train your navigation system on your voice?
Yes, you do.
So I went into my wife's car and trained it on my voice.
Oh, nice job.
So
Marianne gets lost.
Nice
so this is so what happens is she tells it to do something, it doesn't listen. I say it and the car and it listens to me immediately.
Boys, I gotta leave, but thanks for letting me come down here and see another side of you, Doc.
I know.
Welcome
you're
well.
Shocked. See, you learned
I'm
something
floored.
Today.
I can't believe it.
I tell you, I
you're
was
taking half the fun out of coming
well,
down.
I was
here.
Excited
and the fact
about
that
this.
I have one too.
I know.
When did you think I was gonna get one?
Oh, listen, when I get my iPhone 4S.
Well, in other words, when Marianne wins something, probably
I'm waiting. I'm waiting for her to win it. That's the problem. I've been waiting, and she's
wife wins everything.
Can we get like the if she gets the new iPad? Can you give it to one of us?
She
gets the old one. Probably.
She's got to go, boys. I'll see you later.
Oh, okay.
Bye,
all
David.
Okay.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
David Bird. Everybody. Nice to see him. I think we've taken a break, though.
Okay,
I mean,
very good.
Our brains are smoking from that.
We
and,
are,
yeah,
certainly.
Let's do that. So you're listening to Tech Talk. This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. And we will be back with more Tech Talk right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University. Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
I'm Jim Russ.
And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Yes, today we're going to feature Stephen Paul Jobs.
Was there any question?
There was no question about that. Stephen Paul Jobs, co-founder, of course, chairman and CEO of Apple, known affectionately as Steve. Steve Jobs was born February 24, 1955, in San Francisco, California. His mother was a graduate student. His father was going to school there. They weren't married, and their parents did not want them to get married. So they gave Steve up for adoption. He was a graduate student. They gave him up for adoption.
I didn't know that.
And they found a parent. They found a couple who actually wanted a child. It was a medical doctor, and so when Steve was born, they called him and said, "Hey, Steve's been born. You know, our son's been born. The baby is ready for you to pick up." And they said, "Oh, we decided we wanted a girl." So they didn't take Steve.
Uh huh.
And so then the mother, who was a graduate student, wanted to only give up her child for adoption if it was to a couple that was college educated.
Right.
That was the key. That's why she went with the first couple. So she went to the next couple on the list, called them up, and this was Paul Jobs and Clara Jobs from Mountain View, California, and they took Steve. And then a few days later, his mother realized that neither one of them had a college degree, so she refused to sign the adoption papers. They had a big negotiation, and finally Paul and Clara said, "Look, we will guarantee that we send Steve to college." And when they guaranteed that, she allowed them to adopt Steve. And Steve ultimately did start college. He didn't graduate. Mm-hmm. And that's the rest of the story.
That wasn't part of the deal.
No.
They sent him to college.
They did. Jobs attended the Cupertino Junior High School and then Homestead High School in Cupertino, California. While he was going through high school, he'd go to the after-school lectures. He'd go after school to lectures at Hewlett-Packard, the Hewlett-Packard Company in Palo Alto, California. He was later hired by HP as a summer employee, and that's where he met Steve Wozniak. One of the guys, Steve Wozniak, was sort of a hardware hacker. They called him Woz.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, he co-founded Apple with Steve Wozniak. Now, following high school graduation in 1972, Steve enrolled in Reed College in Portland. It was a fairly expensive college. His parents were not that wealthy. They had saved the entire time that Steve was growing up so that he could go to college. And Steve was there at college in Portland, going to school and spending their money. And he said, you know, he's looked at his parents, they'd saved their whole life, and he was just blowing through all their savings. And he said, you know, I'm sitting here at Reed College, I don't even know what I want to do in life.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I don't even know whether this college stuff is even relevant to that's anything useful. And he said, and he just didn't want to waste his parents' money. So he dropped out after a semester. But what was interesting, after he dropped out, he dropped back in and audited classes for about a year and a half. And he said when he dropped back into audit classes, he really started learning things because he took what he wanted to take instead of what was required. Now, he didn't have any money, so he was sleeping on the floor of his friends' apartments. He collected Coke bottles to get enough money for food. And that once a week he would walk 7 miles to the Harry Kushner Center, and he would get a free meal. And so he did this for a year and a half, just sort of. And he said that what he learned while he dropped back into college had a tremendous impact on him. For instance, one class he took was calligraphy.
Uh-huh.
It turned out Reed College had this fantastic calligraphy department. They had calligraphy all over the place. And so he took this course. And he learned all about multiple typefaces, proportionally faced fonts, and he just thought that this artwork of calligraphy was beautiful. And he just really, really impacted him quite dramatically. And ultimately, that course is what's responsible for the great calligraphy which was on the Macintosh, because he felt that was extremely important. I'll get back to that a little bit later. In 1974, Jobs joined the Homebrew Computer Club with with his friend Steve Wozniak. And they would go there, and Steve Wozniak, of course, was making hardware, and Steve was there trying to figure out what to do with the hardware. Steve Jobs was not really a hardware guy. He could see how you could use something for hardware. Well, he took a job as a technician at Atari because he was still trying to find himself. You see, he dropped out of Reed, took this calligraphy class. He didn't really know that he was going to use that for computers yet. He hadn't connected the dots, as Steve said. And he wanted to find himself, so he wanted to save money for a trip to India. And he wanted to go to India, meditate, and find out who he was. And so he saved enough money working at Atari. And then he finally traveled with a friend from Reed College to India. And he, in search of spiritual enlightenment while he was there. And while he was in India, he converted to Buddhism. And he came back with his head shaved, wearing traditional Indian clothing as a Buddhist. He went back to Atari to work for a while, and he said, you know, this working these video games isn't much fun. He got Wozniak to come in, because he was supposed to work on a circuit board. He brought Woz in to come back and help him with this circuit board, and that was always the sort of the yin-yang relationship. Steve Jobs would get the idea, then Wozniak would sort of put the hardware together to make it work. So they did that for a while, but finally they just got fed up with Atari and they quit. And in 1976, Steve Jobs, Steve Wozniak, and Ronald Wayne founded Apple. Jobs had convinced Wozniak to assemble a computer, and then Jobs said, I'll sell it. Now, in the beginning, this was the Apple One. Now, if you remember back then, everybody was like really interested in like building their own hardware, and everybody's into hardware. And so they said, why don't we get a box that has... Why don't we get a box and we'll put the circuit board in there, and then the people, when they want their computer, they can buy the keyboard and buy the monitor and assemble the computer, but they don't have to actually worry about the circuit board. So we built the Apple One. And then they started distributing it, and then some guy at a store said, you know, if you would, put a keyboard with this computer and maybe a monitor so you could just buy it and use it, you might sell it to more people. So all of a sudden the light went off, and they came up with Apple II. And the idea here with the Apple II was, instead of selling it to hardware guys, they would actually make it useful so some guy that was only interested in software could use it. He didn't have to tinker with the hardware. And the Apple II just took off. I mean, it just took off. And they just started selling like gangbusters, because for the first time, people that weren't like hardware geeks could actually have a computer. It started growing, and they hired actually one CEO back in 1980 who was with National Semiconductor. And then in 1983, they said, you know, this is a consumer product. Let's hire John Sculley, who's like CEO of Pepsi-Cola. He'll know how to sell this consumer product. So they hired John Sculley to come in here, you know, to market the Apple II. And the following year, Apple aired the Super Bowl ad titled 1984. Do you remember that ad?
I don't remember it, no.
It's where these people were like marching in drones, repeating everything, and that was the people who were doing the PC. And all of a sudden, the people that broke all the rules were Apple.
Mm-hmm.
And so you had the Windows drones, and were, you know, the drones, and then Apple just changed everything. It was actually a very dramatic ad. You can look it up. It's actually on the web. And then January 24th, 1984, was when Jobs introduced the Macintosh. That was a huge, huge. That was actually when they really had the graphical user interface. And the Mac was where all of his efforts in calligraphy paid off. He started putting in proportional fonts and different kind of fonts into the Mac, and he said if it wouldn't have been for that calligraphy class that he just dropped in on while he was just auditing classes at Reed College, probably computers would not have variable-based fonts. Before that, they were all fixed-pitch fonts, you know, where the I had the same amount of space as a C, whereas variable-space fonts, the I has less space because it's a thinner letter. And a variable space font is easier to read. It's easier to read, and it's more appealing artistically.
Right.
So he put these fonts on the Mac, and as he said in his commencement address he gave at Stanford, since Windows copied everything the Mac did, then the Windows machines had variable space fonts. So he probably influenced topography as it relates to computers forever because of that particular class. Mm. But then what happened, after the Mac was released, actually the computer field sales began to drop. This was like a kind of a mini recession for computer technology. It started dropping off, and Steve wanted, of course, get more technology, be more innovative, and then Scully, the Pepsi-Cola guy, said, wait a minute here, we've got to get a commodity, we've got to commoditize, we can't be increasing costs. And they actually had a division of a splitting of the ways, and they just had complete disagreement over the direction that Apple should go. Scully went to the board, and the board fired Steve Jobs. He was fired from the company that he started, and he was 30 years old. And he said, you know, I listened to him talk about this at this Stanford commencement address, and he said, you know, for about 3 or 4 months, he felt like a failure. And he mm-hmm. felt like he let down all the entrepreneurs there in Silicon Valley, the young entrepreneurs. He'd failed at his first big company, and he sort of didn't have a direction. And then after 3 or 4 months, he realized that actually he loves technology. And nobody is stopping him from doing what he loves, so he's just fine. I'll just do what I love. So he started Next Computer. He'd gone, this was NEXT, he'd gone to talk to a graduate student at Stanford, and they were doing protein folding experiments, and like she was trying to do the software and understand how proteins fold, and she was getting all wrapped around an axle and trying to get enough processing speed and working on the computer. And he said, wouldn't it be great if I could have a workstation for academics, so that somebody working on protein folding wouldn't have to be a computer expert, and they could have a high-power workstation right there that would be as easy to use as the Macintosh. And that was sort of the genesis of Next Computer, to make a high-end workstation for educational operations. So he worked on the Next Computer, and it was really a hardware company. After about a year, he started with $7 million, by the way. He just threw all of his savings into it. $7 million. After about a year, he was running out of money. Because he didn't have a product yet. Mm-hmm. Didn't really have a product direction yet. Too much of a direction. And he convinced Ross Perot to invest in Next Computer.
Wow.
I didn't realize that. So Ross invested in Next Computer. And they finally released their first workstation in 1990. So he started it in 85. It was 5 years before they released the first workstation. Mm. And this workstation sold for $10,000.
Yeah.
It was actually extremely advanced and so expensive that nobody would buy it.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much not many people did buy it. It was 1990. It turned out Tim Berners-Lee, who was the developer of the World Wide Web, he bought one. That was good, but they didn't really sell that many. Then he came up with what's called the Next Cube. He took this whole thing and put it into like a magnesium cube, which is very beautiful, like a piece of art. And the Next Cube really didn't sell. It was also expensive. Ultimately, they Next only sold about 50,000 computers, and they weren't making that much money at all. So in 1993, he said, you know, maybe we should become a software company since this hardware is not going along anywhere. So they developed what they call Next Step. It was an operating system based on Unix BSD, and it was object-oriented. It was a very good development for an operating system. Then they, Next, in 1996, developed WebObjects, which was an object-oriented program for developing web application. In 1996, get this, Apple announced that they would buy Next Computers for $429 million. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
So they bought it. Apple bought it, and they brought Steve Jobs back. In 1996, he was gone for 11 years, about 11 years. They brought him back and made him interim CEO. Immediately, he ended some of the initiatives of Scully. Like, Scully had gone into this Mac cloning business. He wanted to make Macintosh computers like Dell computers. They got rid of the cloning program, and he immediately started working on innovative ideas that Scully had been dumping on because he wanted to make it a commodity. So he came out with the iMac, which was a very, very successful product, and it started a whole series of i products. The iMac was the first of them. And what really Steve Jobs did, see, there were a lot of engineers with good ideas. He was able to listen to the engineering ideas and give them enough feedback from a consumer perspective to help them craft the technology and fit the constraints so that it would meet the needs of the consumer and still be affordable. Then he came up with the iPod portable music player. Now, of course, the guy who had the iPod idea, Steve hired him, but he recognized that. He molded that. And the iPod actually changed the way music, digital music, was distributed. And he set up the iTunes store. Now, it turns out that this next computer was quite important because WebObjects, which was a next computer software project, was used to develop the Apple Store, the Mobile Me services, as well as the iTunes Store. Next Step operating system was morphed into the Macintosh operating system 10, OS X. So he ended up pulling in all of the software technology from Next, and that fueled the sort of the next impetus and the next advances within Apple. In 2007, Apple entered the cell phone business with the introduction of the iPhone. Now, there was a second company that he started while he was working on Next Computers. In 1986, he bought the graphics group from Lucasfilm for $10 million. He later renamed it Pixar. Now, what he wanted to do was make high-end graphics processing hardware. So they worked on this thing for 5 years. And nobody would buy their hardware. It was a super expensive hardware. Nobody would buy it. And finally, he got the idea, I've got this great graphical software and hardware. Why don't we make our own animated movies? So it was like the second idea for Pixar, and they got a contract with Disney to produce computer animated features, and their first one was Toy Story, and then they had Finding Nemo. They had a whole series of them, which were hugely successful. By 2006, get this, Disney purchased Pixar for $7.4 billion. And it was an all-stock deal, and that gave Jobs 7% interest in Disney.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he just created that because he was thrown out of Apple.
That, and basically, you know, that the idea for what he intended to do it, use it for, was a failure because nobody wanted it. It was too expensive.
It was too expensive, so then he
found another use for it.
So he just repositioned it, and so if. Let's go back and you can sort of see a theme into what he was doing. He always followed his dream.
Mm-hmm.
He never really tried to, you know, follow the path that everybody else did. And in his presentation at Stanford, he said, you know, he didn't know the significance of his journey until he looked backwards. He couldn't connect the dots until he looked backwards. Looking forward, he had no idea that this calligraphy class would be that important. Looking back, it changed everything. Now, the other thing that he discovered in his life, when he was thrown out of Apple in 1985, he was 30 years old, thrown out of the company that he started. And he realized that what really made a difference was that you do something that you love. And it actually didn't matter what it was, and he said he could still do that. Mm-hmm. And so he really wasn't worried about that. And the final thing that he did, and I think this came from his experiences for spiritual enlightenment, he lived every day like it was his last day. And every morning he'd get up, he says, if this were my last day, what I'm going to do today, would that be what I would like it to be?
Mm-hmm.
And he says, if you have two or three days where the answer is no, you've got to change something.
Right.
And so he'd always do that. And he said, you know, when you have that perspective, it makes things really simple. Some people, you know, they're afraid to take a chance. They say, oh, I've got all this. If I take a chance, I'm going to lose everything. But if it's your last day, you just go for it. And he says, this last day philosophy had really impacted him quite dramatically through his whole life. So he's really kind of a spiritual guy, and he's kind of a counterculture guy. He also said in his some of his other writings, you know, when he was, you know, trying to find himself and going to India, he experimented with LSD. And he said, I mean, he didn't do it that long, but he said the experiences with LSD were transformative for him. It helped awaken him. So he always felt that was transformative. His calligraphy class was, his trip to India was. And so he was quite an exceptional guy. Yeah. Now, he's listed on 338 U.S. patent applications or patents. He's either listed as the primary one or a co-author of the patent. His estimated wealth in 2010 was $8.3 billion. His estimated wealth in 2011 is $7 billion because the stock market's gone down a little bit. In August of around 2006, he was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, and they thought that it was a form of cancer that they could actually operate on. After he got that diagnosis, he didn't accept it, and he didn't want to have traditional medical treatment. He went 9 months trying to do alternative medicines and doing this and that. And finally, that wasn't working, so he went in and had it operated on, and they thought they got all of the cancer. But actually, since 2006, he hasn't really fully recovered, and ultimately I think the pancreatic cancer came back. He resigned as CEO of Apple only a month ago. In August 5th, just this week, he died at age 56, really too young.
Yeah.
But he made a difference, and you can just see the outpouring from just every man who's used his computers because he's made technology accessible to everyone. After the break, I want to do a little bit more introspection on Steve Jobs and sort of, you know, what he means and the technology and where it's going.
Sounds like a plan. We're going to do the quiz today, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, we're going to do that coming up here, the pop quiz. The number to call is 877-936-9333. Remember that. You'll need it in just a few minutes. You're listening to Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM HD2, 1035 FM HD2. We will be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor, 5 of the 30 occupations projected to grow the fastest by 2016 are IT-related, led by network and data communications analysts, software engineers, and systems analysts. 70% of business technology professionals surveyed by Information Week say there is a shortage of IT talent in the U.S. today. However, if you have previous military or management experience, there are tremendous opportunities for you in the IT field if you retrain. Stratford University's bachelor's degree in information technology prepares you to analyze, design, implement, administer, and secure computer networks and information systems. Master's degrees are also offered in information systems and software engineering. Day and evening classes are offered so you can continue in your current field. Call Stratford University at 800-444-0804 or visit online at stratford.edu. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, Tyson's Corner in Woodbridge.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
It's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now, here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
Not only is this a radio show, but it's a classroom of the airways. It's dual purpose.
Yes.
Classroom of the internet, classroom of FM, and classroom of AM.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you attend class, you must also pay attention because there will be... And there should be a pop quiz.
Of course there should.
Now, the nice thing with this particular pop quiz is if you get the right answer, not only do you get an A+, but you also get two tickets to fine dining at either the Escoffier Dining Room or the Karim Dining Room. Now, earlier in the show, I was talking about Steve Jobs and, of course, his whole career and life. And when he started, his parents, of course, after they adopted him, promised to send him to college. What was the name of the college that he selected but actually didn't graduate from?
Right.
If you get that college name correct, you'll get two tickets to fine dining at the Escoffier Dining Room. And how do they reach us, Jim?
Now, in order to answer the question, you must call us on the telephone. And the number to do that would be 877-936-9333, 877-936-9333. Once again, 877-936-9333. Or you can reach us via Skype, right?
You can reach us, just go on Skype to Tech Talk Radio 1. And that will be forwarded directly to the studio, and you can make a free call from anywhere in the world.
The phones are melting.
They're melting right
now. Yes,
they are.
So, we're going to talk a little bit more about Steve Jobs.
Yeah, let's talk. I want to talk briefly about the impact of Steve Jobs. He made technology accessible by allowing every man to see its potential. He was not actually an electronics guy. He wasn't really a programmer. I would say he was more of an artist. He was more of a communicator. And he was able then to connect with the user, and he was actually able to apply his artistic bent toward the technology. The computer was never his focus. It was always the user. Everything was about the user. And he was always kind of an anti-establishment guy. You go back to his counterculture. He was the drugs. He was going to India to find himself. This was back during the time of the big protest. And it was always the little guy against the establishment. And this was everything that he did was always with that idea. For instance, when he came up with the iPod, he negotiated with all the record companies to develop a different way to distribute music. So, which was really the way people had always wanted. You buy it by the song instead of getting stuck with an album that's got two songs that you like and you've got eight songs you don't like.
Right.
And so he basically made music, distribution, meet the needs of the user. And then when he came up with the cell phone, he went to the telephone companies. And before that, the phone companies would basically get a phone. They would modify the software. They would sell all of their products. They'd put a lot of stuff on there that the user didn't want just so they could, like, milk the user for more. And Steve said, look, if you're going to have the iPhone, we're going to put the software on, and you, Mr. Phone Company, cannot change it. And he made the first phone that was actually wrapped around the user experience. And so it was like the little guy against the phone company. So he was a creator, an artist, and he used really technology as his palette.
Mm-hmm.
He was a perfectionist. He wanted everything to be perfect. Even when he was making his first Apple I, he wanted all the wires in the circuit board to all be lined up perfectly. So you open it up, and it's like a the circuit board is like a work of art.
Mm-hmm.
He said it's just really important. He was a perfectionist in function. He would want everything designed exactly so that the user could use it very easily, very intuitive. Even in manufacturing, he'd go to the manufacturing plants. He would go in. He said he expected the floors of the manufacturing plant to be clean enough to eat off of. And so he'd go in there, they'd clean them off, they'd line up everything. And he said, look, if you automate manufacturing, if you keep everything clean, if you keep it organized, you can scale up, and you can scale up fast. He also pursued what he loved. He always followed his passions. He was never worried about making money in particular, although he made a lot of money.
Yeah.
And he would always do what he enjoyed doing. And he was hoping as he sort of meandered through life, taking his calligraphy class, doing this, doing that, that would all add up and the dots would connect, and they certainly did. He always was deeply concerned about his customers and what their experiences would be. So whenever you would talk to the engineers, he represented the customer. Now, he said you can't go out and survey customers because if you ask customers what they want, since they don't know what the potential of technology is, they're going to tell you what they want in terms of yesterday's technology. And he's thinking about tomorrow's technology, so he can't actually survey the customers. So he has to represent the customers, and he has to help meld the technology. He has to force it to do something beyond what we currently have, and frequently that would force engineering innovation that could deliver something that would be very cheap yet very powerful. He lived, as I said earlier, he lived every day until he was as though it was his last, and that really influenced what he was doing. He really did change the way computers are viewed, the way they're used worldwide. You can go to any elementary school and see that. We'll miss Steve Jobs and all the creation that he did, and we hope that that Apple Computer will continue to innovate and thrive with
yes.
his vision.
Yep. Let us, we have a bunch of people on the phone. Let's take a break here to play the game. Let's go to line four. This is Clay calling from Springfield, Virginia. Clay, good morning, and welcome to Tech Talk.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Okay, Doc asked
the
question.
Earlier in the show, I talked about Steve Jobs. What college did he start and then drop out of?
That would be Reed College.
That is correct.
That is correct. The correct answer. And Clay, you're the winner.
You get two tickets to fine dining at the Escoffier Dining Room.
All right, Clay, thank you for listening. Hold on a second. We will have Andrew take your information down, and we'll send you the tickets right out. You are listening to the best of Tech Talk on one of these fine radio stations. WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FMHD2 Manassas, and WTOP FMHD2 Washington. We'll be right back after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University. Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different. With campuses in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed. Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. October 7th was Ada Lovelace Day.
Oh, was it really?
Now, this is a day for commemorating women's...
Oh, I had to do this.
Oh, yeah. Ada Lovelace.
Yeah. Enough of that.
She, of course, worked with Babbage, Charles Babbage,
on his
analytic engines.
Both of whom have been profiled on Profiles in IT.
You know, Jim, it's a different Ada Lovelace than you're familiar with.
I know. I'm always going for the cheap laugh, though,
It was a day for commemorating women's contributions to science and technology, and it's named after the woman who's widely credited with being the world's first computer programmer, Augusta Ada King, the Countess of Lovelace. And daughter of Lord Byron.
She comes from lineage here.
She does. She's Countess of Lovelace and the daughter of Lord Byron was an English writer who collaborated with the British mathematician Charles Babbage on notes about his analytic engine, which was a steam-powered mechanical computer.
We've come a long way
really come a long way to the Apple iPad. A steam-powered mechanical computer. Now, the engine was actually never built in Babbage's or Lovelace's lifetime, but a project is now underway in the UK headed by British programmer and blogger John Graham Cummings to build a working model. Lovelace translated an article by an Italian mathematician on the engine for Babbage and added extensive notes, including an algorithm that many consider to be the first computer program, which was a method for calculating a sequence of Bernoulli numbers. So she was actually found a way to use this calculator to compute these numbers. Hence, the first programmer. Now, there's some debate over how much of her notes were her own work and how much of it were at Babbage's direction, but she's nonetheless credited with being the first programmer. In fact, there's a programming language named after her, Ada. Ada programming language. And she's also been featured in a film, Conceiving Ada. So there you go. That's actually the first time I've ever known that we had a Ada Lovelace Day, and that was October 7th, and they're trying now to emphasize the importance of women in computing. Facebook is bigger than ever. 2 weeks ago, Facebook confirmed that it had 800 million active users. There were only 757 million users on the Internet worldwide in 2004, according to World Stats. Now, here's some of the breakdown of the users. The Facebook active list is 38% of the entire current Internet population, 38% of the people who are on Facebook, 87% of the entire Internet population of Asia, 168% of the Internet population of Europe, It's 370% of the internet population of Latin America. So they've got quite a few users there in Facebook. After Facebook passes 1 billion users, the next milestone will be more users than there are people in India and then China. If Facebook were a country, it would be the world's third largest by population.
Wow.
Isn't that something?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're having a small problem with these drones. You know?
Yeah, I heard about this.
The drones, of course, have been... are used for, you know, making these, these are unmanned aircraft which go after high-value enemy targets. A computer virus has infected the cockpit of American's Predator and Reaper drones. Now, the cockpit, of course, is not in the drone. The cockpit is actually in the United States, in Nevada, actually. They've got a pilot in Nevada flying the zones. And this computer virus actually logs every keystroke as they fly missions over Afghanistan and other war zones. The virus was first detected 2 weeks ago by the military's host-based security system, but it's not prevented the pilots at Creech Air Force Base in Nevada from flying their missions. There have been no confirmed incidents of classified information being lost or sent to an outside source. See, what they're worried about is that this clone is going to capture all the keystrokes, and then send it to a remote location. Now, they don't have evidence that that actually hasn't been done. Now, the virus has resisted multiple efforts to remove it from Creech computers, the security analysts say. Military and network security specialists aren't sure whether the virus and its so-called keylogger were introduced intentionally or by accident. They don't know exactly how it spread, but it's actually hit both classified and unclassified machines. See, they actually have removable hard drives whenever they run a new data, and whenever they run a new program. Since President Obama has assumed office, the fleet of approximately 30 CIA-directed drones have hit targets in Pakistan more than 230 times. Now, in the summer of 2009, U.S. forces discovered days and days and hours of drone footage on the laptop of Iraqi insurgents. They got a $26 piece of software that allowed the militants to capture the data. You see, they weren't sending the data back encrypted so people could pick up the data on the battlefield and our enemies could
use
it.
That kind of makes no sense, doesn't it?
That was actually quite a big error. I hope they've encrypted the data now. Now, the way these things work, there's actually a drone pilot and a sensor operator that sit in their flight suits. They pretend like they're actually in flight suits, and they sit in front of a series of screens. The pilot's hand is on the joystick guiding the drone as it soars above Afghanistan, Iraq, or some other battlefield, and the sensor operator directs the sensor. So they sit in a cockpit in an Air Force base in Nevada flying these drones. Predator and Reaper crews use removable hard drives to upload map images and transport mission videos from one computer to another. This virus is believed to have spread through those removable hard drives. So that's kind of a small problem that I think they need to be worried about. Don't you think so?
I think you're right.
Don't you think so?
I think you're right. About a minute and a half or so?
About a minute and a half left. Mm-hmm. Well, Verizon is suing over the net neutrality rules again. They don't really like these net neutrality rules. And because of the ambiguity, they're actually suing in the U.S. Appeals Court against the FCC because the FCC is forcing certain rules on how they manage the network, how they allocate bandwidth. They believe the FCC has overstepped the bounds. Now, they said in their public release that they don't really disagree with net neutrality, but they just want to make certain that FCC does not assume rights that they shouldn't have, and they want to keep the FCC under wraps. So this is actually kind of a debate over how much should the government get involved with net neutrality rules, because what they're trying to do is apply rules that were set up for telecommunications and telephone to data on the internet, and many believe that that's not really a valid way to go.
That's it. We're out of time for this week. Thanks for listening to the Best of Tech Talk. We love your emails. Please send them to techtalkonline.com. We will see you next week.
Learn more about about Stratford University Program's consumer information by visiting their website at www.stratford.edu/content_pages/view/degree-programs.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors.